This is The Waves.
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 Welcome to The Waves, Slate's podcast about gender, feminism, and flawed but lovable heroes. Every episode, you get a new pair of women to talk about the thing we can't get off our minds. And today, you've got me, Allegra Frank.
And me, Madeline Ducharme.
And today, we're going to talk about TV. Of all the TV shows we expected to return this year, Netflix's Master of None was pretty low down on the list. Last month, the comedy's third season premiered more than 4 years after its second. And while season two was critically acclaimed, Master of None's hiatus and then quiet surprise return were met with very different levels of excitement and anticipation. The new season of this rom-com, which is now called Master of None Moments in Love, sort of like a mini-series, now stands as another example of a disgraced celebrity's steps toward a self-made redemption. So Madeline, let's talk. What got you interested in this subject this week, in the return of Master of None?
I am most interested in this topic. The reason I can't stop thinking about it is that the two people that are behind this new iteration of the Netflix original, Aziz Ansari and Lena Waithe, who play very different roles in this iteration than they did on the other version of Master of None, they've both had pretty fraught public accusations leveled against them in the past few years. And a lot of our listeners, maybe even myself, maybe even Allegra, might consider one or both of them to be like pretty problematic. But at the same time, the show sort of tells this intimate story of a Black lesbian couple, and that's something we rarely see in a big Netflix series like this. So there are just lots of mixed feelings around here, especially for me as a queer person watching this show.
Mixed feelings is the key phrase here. For those who don't know, Ansari was publicly accused of sexual misconduct in 2018. And Lena Waithe has been accused of not properly supporting women who have alleged harassment on sets of projects she's worked on. We're going to unpack all of that and talk about who we as viewers allow to be our flawed, selfish, but maybe still lovable heroes in a show as complicated as Master of None has become. But first, a break. We are back, picking up 4 years after its previous season, season two. Master of None, Moments in Love is a complete reinvention of Aziz Ansari's original show. And now this time, instead of Ansari's 30-something antics as an inspiring actor in New York City, this new season details the deterioration of a marriage between Lena Waithe's character Denise, who is one of Aziz Ansari's character's best friends, and her wife Alicia, who is played by Naomi Ackie.
Why are you talking to me like this? Like we on the People's Court or something?
I just came in to get the paper signed.
So we really getting divorced? Because we cheat on each other? It just doesn't make sense to me. I mean, Jesse Jackson, Mr. Keep Hope Alive himself.
Stop.
Has a whole ass kid.
You know what? I just came to pick up my shit and get the fuck out of here to sign the fucking papers.
You know what this is? You know what this is? This is marriage.
So while the first two seasons of the show were kind of grounded and frank about a lot of issues in young people's lives, including religion, aging, and especially racism, Master of None was still very much a comedy. But now with Waithe as the core protagonist, Moments in Love sort of shifts away from the humor and instead devotes much of its time on heavy topics, particularly infidelity and miscarriage. So Madeline, I know you, as you said, have a lot of mixed thoughts on this season and just a lot to say in general about how it tackles these themes in particular, both in contrast to the original run of Master of None, but also just as a contained miniseries in itself. So talk to me a little bit about your takeaways from Master of None, Moments in Love, and especially who we are dealing with at the center here, Lena Waithe.
So this first part of our conversation will pretty much just be an aesthetic conversation, a cinematic conversation.
Our film critic hats are on, baby.
Right. Which is almost impossible to do when the first names that you confront right after an episode are like directed by Aziz Ansari, co-written by Aziz Ansari and Lena Waithe. But set that aside for a moment. I was pretty much immediately filled with dread at the the announcement that this show was coming back, mostly because I was, you know, just like, it's been a long time. I don't know where we're headed, where we're going here. But after sort of watching the trailer and seeing like, oh, I really like Naomi Ackie. She shows up in The Bisexual, which is a really great series from Channel 4. And it was like so exciting to see her in this kind of star turn where she got to play a very serious and just complicated character in a complicated and intense relationship. And I liked that we were kind of shifting perspective. And so I got a little like cautiously optimistic about the show in general. But at the same time, kind of as soon as you jump into it, you're sort of thrust into the like just the darkest and saddest moments of a marriage that is still a marriage, kind of right before it will no longer be. And I don't really mind the topic itself, but it's hard to even start to feel for these characters when you know so little about them. Naomi Ackie, for example, is not in seasons 1 and 2 of the show at all. And Lena Waithe's character feels, maybe generously, she's a new iteration of Denise. Maybe ungenerously, she feels like an entirely different character.
Right. It absolutely has a strangely and starkly different tone. I think I agree, it's fair to say that Denise is a bit of a different character here, especially in that, I mean, just positionally, right? She is now the protagonist. We've never seen her in this kind of role, except for the episode that she actually, Lena Waithe, won an Emmy for, which was called Thanksgiving in season 2. And that episode actually won a lot of acclaim because it did give the spotlight to Denise in this really kind of beautiful half hour about a young Black woman who is contending with coming out to her family, her quite religious family.
Right.
And so this is, you know, the aftermath of that. She's clearly an out woman, but the tenderness that we got to see there and the sympathy that she engendered in us, that pretty much has vanished here because, as you said, it is the sort of the breakup story in, I want to say, in slow motion, because this is a very, very ploddingly slow show. It's only like 3 hours, really. It's like 5 half-hour episodes. The first episode's an hour, but things move so slowly that to kind of watch them break apart, it feels almost extra wrenching, except for the fact that, as you said, we don't really know who these people are. We're dropped in the middle of things.
Right. I don't even think it feels more wrenching to watch it. I was mostly just bored. Like, I can only watch them dance and be cute while unloading the laundry for like 25 seconds. Why was that like 2 minutes long? I understand that that is supposed to maybe bring up some of the softness and like tender feelings I felt towards Denise when we were watching the Thanksgiving episode, which is just so good. But I kind of am just like, who are these people? I don't know them anymore. So why am I spending so much time watching them do their cute domestic thing when I don't even really know how they met? I don't really know what they like about each other.
Right.
All sorts of things like that. And I'm curious what you thought of the series as a whole, and then also like what episodes, you know, sparked something for you.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely thought that this 5-episode arc was an interest. I'll give it some credit in that it was an interesting experiment in just really dropping us into a crumbling relationship and weird moments of the aftermath. I mean, it is called Moments in Love, which I do think is a bit of a misnomer in that the love is very tried and perhaps broken.
Yeah, it's like the same thing as Marriage Story, where I'm like, right. Come on.
It's like, it is a story about a marriage, except the marriage is no longer a marriage. They're trying to get out of it. Yeah, it is very much moments in a disintegrating love. And I think something that I will praise here, even though, as you said, it is uncomfortable that, you know, every episode is saddled with, directed by Aziz Ansari. And that is really hard to ignore, considering the Aziz Ansari of it all is a big negative for Master of None these days, which we'll get into later. But seeing a Black queer relationship at the fore is something really unique, and it's something that Master of None is able to present to us without it feeling, you know, forced or out of nowhere, in the sense that one of the few things we really know about Denise at this stage is that she is a Black queer woman. She came out in her very pivotal episode in season 2, and so we're carrying that forward here with two Black women. One is, you know, a femme, beautiful Brit, and the other being, you know, the more gruff Denise, who's a little colder, more self-involved. And something that's really beautiful and really specific to this kind of storyline is the idea of them trying to have a baby, right? Because they're looking for a sperm donor, and they have to go through the process of finding one, of going and being inseminated, all the nitty-gritty biological stuff of, you know, donors. And there's one beautiful episode that is solely focused on Naomi Ackie's character, Alicia, that follows her as a now single lesbian Black woman. And I know you like this episode too, Madeline. This was definitely the strongest episode of the five.
Yeah, I think that there's something like very, very striking about that scene where her fertility doctor tells her, like, we need to prove to the insurance company that you are infertile and that you've been trying to get pregnant for a year. And she's like, well, how does that work for me? I haven't been trying, quote unquote, for a year. And the doctor's so frank. She says, like, there's no code for gay and desires pregnancy. And like that single interaction in that scene made me feel more than any sort of interaction between Lena Waithe's character and Naomi Ackie, which is sort of the central relationship that we're supposed to care about. I will say too that there's a really, really remarkable depiction of her character, Naomi Ackie's character, Alicia, developing this like friendship and this like very, very intimate relationship she has with her nurse who works with her on these multiple, like, kind of exhausting fertility treatments. What did you think of that? I honestly felt like that's a queerer relationship than yeah. The marriage at the center of this. Which
that was honestly,
later.
That was when I felt the love, this, you know, relationship that Alicia builds with her IVF nurse, who is just such a wonderful character who, like, calls her on the phone. I agree. That is the truly heartbreaking and then heartwarming relationship of the series, both Alicia finding a comforting, stable presence in this nurse, and then also eventually getting the baby of her dreams when the process finally takes. So even though there is some feeling of letdown in the relationship of these two Black queer women being presented, because it's like already fraught from the get-go, at least we are seeing this really interesting and under-portrayed aspect of being a Black lesbian, being a Black queer woman specifically in this country, you know, the difficulties of trying to actually get a baby when you don't have a man around to do it for free.
Every scene between Alicia, played by Naomi Ackie, and Cordelia Blair, who plays a nurse that actually shares her first name, which makes all of this so much more special. Every time I saw that, I felt such care and such intimate tenderness. And I was like, that is the moment in love. Basically nothing else compared to those moments in love, which also made the ending sort of unsatisfying.
We are going to take a break here, but if you like what you're hearing and want to hear more from Madeline and myself on another topic, check out our Slate Plus segment, Gateway Feminism, where today Madeline and I talk about one thing that helped make us feminists. I'll be talking about the Powerpuff Girls. Now we're going to shift focus from the screen of Master of None to the world of its creators off screen, Aziz Ansari and Lena Waithe. So for those unfamiliar with the way that these two have stirred up kind of a lot of controversy in the past few years, we're going to break it down for you real quick. So Madeline, tell us what happened with Aziz Ansari.
So in early 2018, at one of the most charged moments of the Me Too movement, a pretty messily reported article was published on this weird semi-feminist website called babe.net. No one had really heard of it before. And that report detailed this really unpleasant encounter between a 22-year-old woman and Aziz Ansari. In it, she kind of alleges that he was forceful, callous, misread all of her body language, kind of continued to pursue certain sex acts even after she indicated verbally and also non-verbally that she wasn't into it. And because those allegations sort of paled in comparison to Weinstein and Lauer, Ansari got himself a lot of public defenders. But he also retreated from public life after saying that, you know, he was taking her words to heart and that he had thought the encounter was entirely consensual. He came back 2 years later with a Netflix comedy special, and it opened with a recounting of this whole saga. He says that he felt terrible that she felt that way, but he stopped short of apologizing.
And I always think about a conversation I had with one of my friends where he was like, you know what, man? That whole thing made me think about every date I've ever been on. And I thought, wow, well, that's pretty incredible. This made not just me, but other people be more thoughtful, then that's a good thing. And that's how I feel about it. And I know this isn't the most hilarious way to begin a comedy show, but it's important to me that you know how I feel about that whole thing before we share this night together.
So that's the Aziz story. Meanwhile, with Lena, so she's garnered infamy less because of her personal life in the same way that Aziz has, and more because of her work itself. So ever since Master of None season 2, she's found a lot of success with other shows. She created The Chi, which is a Showtime drama that draws inspiration from her life growing up in the South Side of Chicago. She executive produced the Amazon series Them, and she also had her feature film script debut, which was Queen and Slim. And all three films are united in that they feature sort of needlessly cruel Black violence on screen, or in some cases off. But Lena Waithe herself has received backlash and criticism, particularly from Black critics and audiences, for the way that her work outside of Master of None has featured its Black heroes being martyrs for the cause of either Black Lives Matter or just for the purpose of provocation, for entertainment. It's become sort of a weird calling card for Lena Waithe, with some people online thinking that, you know, oh, Lena Waithe's involved, then it's going to involve beautiful Black people being attacked or killed, which is not the best reputation for someone to develop, and especially based off, you know, how they started, which was as a sympathetic comic character on a Netflix show. And as the creator of The Chi, she also experienced some offset drama when the lead actor of the show was accused of misconduct involving both his co-star and then later on a female showrunner. And Lena Waithe reportedly didn't handle those situations very well and kind of shirked responsibility, which isn't great, especially when it's someone who purports herself to be an ally for Black audiences and especially Black queer audiences. So both of these people, obviously pretty different situations, but when Aziz and Lena are uniting again to star and co-create a show after this, all of this happens and all of this is reported, you can't blame people for kind of balking at it, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of shocked because it's just not even, it hasn't even been that long. These people have sort of been semi-present in some of the discourses we've been having for the last couple of years about all sorts of things on sets, on camera. We've been talking about this for a bit, and so it feels a little audacious to come back with something that's supposed to be so intimate and so different than what they were doing before. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like going back to the idea of these being these flawed yet lovable heroes. Like the idea that we're being asked to find anything lovable in Aziz Ansari or Lena Waithe's characters on screen right now is really difficult, I think, for a lot of viewers who are in the know. I mean, even just Lena Waithe's allegations and backlash are a little more niche, and Aziz Ansari's were quite well publicized. So even just his connection alone could make it a little bit hard to get yourself invested. But at the same time, like, obviously Netflix has welcomed them back. So it kind of brings up the question of, like, who has their careers dramatically altered by accusations and who doesn't, right? Because we have people like Aziz and, in this case, Lena, right, who are sort of welcomed back by a huge media company despite being sort of condemned in the public imagination and seen as no longer welcome.
I think one of the things that I keep coming back to, too, is that I don't actually really want Aziz Ansari to go away forever. I don't think that is a solution to right the wrongs that he's accused of. I just think that it wouldn't have been too hard to publicly reckon with the fact that he, you know, had hurt someone, and that even if he wasn't really consciously doing it, it still happened. And I think one of the ugliest things that actually came out of the Aziz Ansari moment, babe.net moment, was the number of people who sort of mentioned, like, well, if this is inappropriate and this is wrong, then every date I've ever been on with a woman has been wrong. And I'm like, oh my God, what are you admitting to? And I think if you're the guy who writes a book about the nuances of dating, which he literally did, the nuances of love and dating, the least you can do is say, clearly, I thought I better understood myself in some of these situations than I actually do. And I'm going to spend some time looking inward. And I also would like to apologize for my behavior. I don't know. It's just, it's really hard to sit with this romantic, complicated story about two Black lesbians and know that he's sort of omnipresent in the show. And
absolutely.
Why is he telling this story too?
Right. Like, in some sense, I am grateful that someone is telling this story, but the fact that it's this guy, and I mean, I do agree, like, he is this normal, and they make fun of him for this in the show too. He's not like particularly attractive. And in the show, his character is like not amazingly successful, right? So there's like, he's not the typical beautiful romantic lead in any sense. And it's especially interesting to see that when he's a South Asian American who gets to be the romantic lead. But then with Lena Waithe, when we take her involvement, like, yes, it's great to have Black queer female representation, but she also is not without her problems. Like, this is something that a lot of people take issue with, is that we want to have a Black lesbian at the fore with creative control, but do we want this one? Like, she she obviously comes from a marginalized community. She's one of the few, you know, Black lesbians who is working in the comedy, like the critically acclaimed comedy field, and starring in a show like this. It's a rare thing. So, like, we want people like that. And we like Naomi Ackie, so at least we have her. But Lena Waithe, it's frustrating that she is the representative we have to deal with. So her career clearly has not been too dramatically altered, despite losing a lot of the goodwill she originally had built up.
Right.
And Aziz Ansari clearly is still, you know, he still gets the Netflix show, and he even gets to appear in it a little bit. So I do agree, you know, we don't want to totally lose people like Aziz. But what about people that aren't welcome back into Hollywood? Because someone like Lena, you know, I'm thankful, but also a little surprised she hasn't been blacklisted. It's already so hard for a marginalized person to gain ground. So I'm thinking about other people whose careers have sort of been ruined in Hollywood. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I followed some of the news developments around the 2016 movie Birth of a Nation, which was directed by and starring Nate Parker. And that was such a buzzy film that got pretty much immediately derailed by a past accusation of rape against Nate Parker. And I feel like we didn't hear from him for years after, only right. for him to return sort of quietly in this last year. But again, even that film wasn't particularly buzzy. And I feel like he's not back in the good graces of a lot of people. And I know a lot of people found that distressing and upsetting at the time for all sorts of different reasons. And I think that, like, sometimes we, I don't know, maybe this is the result of like a deeply democratized, like, social media arena in which all of these things can be shared and discussed and passed around communities and passed around audiences who these cultural products are made for. And when you're interested in writing about culture and you're a critic, you're steeped in that stuff that executives and producers are probably just not steeped in. And I just wonder what our Twitter, you know, banging and our conversations on social media can even do about some of these things. And yeah, I don't know. Like, what is our next step with talking about and engaging with content from somebody like Lena Waithe or somebody like Aziz Ansari?
Yeah, because ultimately, I'm like literally going to quote Hamilton. I always think of follow the money and see where it goes. Like, it's literally just all about the money. But like, these are still people who are, they do have some semblance of power in this industry, despite being, in Lena and Aziz's case, people of color, a woman, a queer person. And that is something to respect. But at the same time, they owe it to us as audiences to do better, especially after these faults have been publicized. And yet, we are sort of rewarding them now. They have been able to maintain the power they have as creators in this industry. We're rewarding them with another season of their show, despite them not really showing up and taking, you know, full responsibility for what they did. What Aziz said, you know, the non-apology apology that he gave from earlier was not great. Like, it doesn't show that he is actually, if not learned, then reckoned with why people were so mad at him.
Right.
And why people are so uncomfortable with him. So the other thing, though, as we both said, is like, we like the first season of Master of None, the first two seasons, right? And there is stuff to like here. We like Naomi Ackie a lot in that one episode. So we are getting some benefit here. But at the same time, do we want these creators to be allowed to continue to offer us this kind of entertainment, or should we instead, you know, sideline them in favor of people who don't have messy backstories?
Right. And I think probably the biggest issue here is, maybe this sounds so rude, maybe it's less the quality of whatever Aziz and Lena make and just the fact that the quantity of stuff made by people like them, queer people, people of color, is so small that we have to pull at our collar and sweat a little while we talk about it for fear that coming after them and saying how much we dislike a show or saying how much we dislike them might threaten the opportunity of other people like them in the future. Like, I wish there was a world in which something could just be bad and it doesn't have to be bad on behalf of all Black lesbians or bad on behalf of South Asian romantic leads. Someone or some show could just, you know, exist as a sort of less than satisfying cultural product, and we don't have to have some sort of reckoning about, like, but that means no one will ever let another person do that thing. Yeah, it bums me out. And it bums me out that they kind of feel like they're the only ones getting to do something as big as this, and we have all these fraught feelings about the people who do this. Kind of feels like Netflix is like, shut up and eat your food. Be happy we even let this happen.
Right. But it's like, can our food be good?
Please.
Can we have good food that doesn't make me feel sick afterward?
And can it come from people who made it that are like kind to their colleagues,
yes,
and are conscious of their power.
Ethically sourced food, farm to table, please.
Free range only.
Free range only. Right. Yeah, we have no, it's hard to have a real answer to these questions of how do we handle creators like this, because there isn't a real answer. And it's still so fresh, this whole, you know, post Me Too movement, that we're still figuring out what to do moving forward,
right,
with creators and those in power. So, Malin, thank you for racking your brain with me on how to handle Lena and Aziz and Master of None in this weird, weird time.
And thank you for making all of watching some of those slow, slow scenes totally worth it.
Wow, you're welcome. Okay, before we head out, let's introduce some levity here. Gonna make that hard pivot from difficult content to content we like. So we were talking about bad food that's gross. Madeline, what's some good content food that's great that you are loving right now? Give us a rec.
So I am totally loving Kristen Arnett's new book. It's called With Teeth. It's a novel. It's a very Floridian novel, which is not something that I would usually reach for on my shelf, but it is also lesbian. And I subscribe to a school of thought from my colleague, Christina Cotterucci, which is that all queer content gets graded on a very generous curve. But you don't even need that curve for this book. It's really, really excellent. And if you're kind of loving a complicated and fraught lesbian couple after watching Moments in Love, but you want a little more action, this book is great. It's about two women. They are trying to raise a son together while, you know, living in this Florida heat of Tampa and the heat and tension of their resentment of one another. It's very excellent. I'm a huge fan of Kristen Arnett. Her first book, Mostly Dead Things, was a big success. And I feel like With Teeth will have a similar following. It just came out on June 1st. And you should also follow her Twitter. I got to recommend that too, because she's hilarious.
Awesome. You know, I'm also not someone who generally subscribes to the Floridian genre of novel, but I'm curious now.
That's great.
Yeah. Okay, cool. So that book is out now.
It is out now. And so what are you leaving us with, Allegra? Like, what delicious thing should I be consuming after I finish recording with you?
Okay, I'm going to recommend an actual food. So this is awesome. Something you can actually consume. Head out to the grocery store after this, y'all. I am a big fan of limited edition s'mores flavored Oreos. I am a huge Oreo connoisseur. I have been eating Oreos my whole life. And every time they put out a new flavor of Oreo, I follow Instagram accounts that tell me when they're going to come out and where you can buy them. So I am ready to go. I have been anticipating these s'mores Oreos, Madeline, literally since January. And they just came out in May. This is actually the second time that they've had them available. The first time was several years ago. So this is very exciting for people like me. They have like a graham cracker flavored cookie and, you know, the usual vanilla cream and some chocolate cream in there. The vanilla cream is actually supposed to be marshmallowy flavored.
Right.
Honestly, your mileage may vary on if this tastes anything like a s'more.
Sure.
And it's not as good as a real s'more, but it is a very good Oreo. And I definitely ate most of a whole package yesterday.
That sounds like an amazing way to have spent your holiday weekend.
It was amazing. I felt very ill afterwards. Did not feel good. So don't do that. Go buy a pack and eat one Oreo and taste it. And you will want to eat the rest of the package, but don't do that.
And maybe you'll even eat them while you read this novel recommendation I gave you.
One hand holding the book, other hand holding the Oreo. If you got milk, the milk is there. You're dipping.
It's perfect for the summer.
Perfect summer situation. That's our show this week. The Waves is produced by Shayna Roth.
Susan Matthews is our editorial director, with June Thomas providing oversight and moral support. And we have additional production help from Rosemary Belson.
If you like the show, be sure to subscribe, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. If you're happy about the return of the Waves like we are, please consider supporting the show by joining Slate Plus. Members get benefits like zero ads on any Slate podcast and bonus episodes of shows like Slow Burn. It's only $1 for the first month. To learn more, go to slate.com/thewavesplus and be sure to email us at thewaves@slate.com.
And The Waves will be back next week. Different hosts, different topic, same time and place.